Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with this serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen in uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And now I'll read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So welcome again, everybody, and the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we're discussing the first part of step four, which is the resentment inventory. And now what I'm going to do is read the first paragraph, and then Ryan and Lorna will share their experience, strength, and hope with that paragraph. So we're going to start off on page 64. Page 64. And it's the paragraph that starts, "Next We Launched." Next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Ryan?
Good evening, everybody. I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
I'm Ryan. This paragraph is actually huge for me, mainly because I didn't stay sober in AA when I first got here. What I got were periods of sobriety. One lasted 4 months, and the other lasted 2 months. And it wasn't particularly fun to drink in AA, I can tell you that. But what happened is after that last debauch, as they call it, I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I just knew that AA was going to be a part of that, and the rest of these steps were going to be a part of that. And I remember that first little period, I had problems sleeping. I don't know if anybody else has experienced that, but lay down to go to bed and it just doesn't happen. And my sponsor, she suggested that I read the big book if I can't sleep. And I actually did do that. And I remember getting to this paragraph where it says, next we launch out on a course of vigorous action. And those words just kind of burned into my mind, because all of a sudden I realized why I continued to drink, even though I was in AA, even though I had made a decision to participate in AA. And it was because I had come to AA and I had gotten comfortable. You know, I just sat around and I went to the meetings or I got the sponsor, but I didn't do any of the work. I didn't do the steps, which for me is really the core of what AA, of how I live my life today. And so I realized how incredibly important this inventory was and how incredibly important it was that I not put it off. You know, it's not that I ever had a problem with the steps or anything, but I just kind of figured like someone would let me know when it was time to do it. And nobody ever let me know. And so I got distracted, you know, and I had made that decision, you know, to turn my life over to the care of God before. But it didn't have a permanent effect, which is what I wanted. Why? Because I didn't do the work. And I can tell you, since being sober, I was, within the first 2 months, I had a written inventory and was doing a fifth step. And to be honest with you, I would have done it sooner, but it took me a little bit of time to find someone who was willing to do that with me. I personally think it's incredibly dangerous to wait to do the steps. I've always found it's kind of like sitting around with a ticking time bomb. It's set, it's going to go off, and I have no idea when. You know, maybe tomorrow it's going to go off. Maybe I got a couple of weeks. Maybe I got a couple of months. You know, so once I make that decision, I'm all about getting down into action and finding out what's causing me to be so screwed up. Because the reality was this, like, drinking was not the problem. It really wasn't. Anybody who's been sober for a little while, any alcoholic, can probably appreciate that. For me, when I stay sober, life just gets painful. It gets overwhelming. I just can't do it anymore, and I need a little break. I need a little time out. And that always looks like a little bit of alcohol, which is never a little bit of alcohol. So it was very important for me to get down to what was going on and to do it as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lauren.
And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be able to do this, but I got to tell you, I don't like it very much. But it is so important to my recovery, and it really is an opportunity because it's an opportunity for growth. And once I get to the other side of the fear of being nervous and letting you guys down because I don't have the perfect message, maybe God can step in and let me express what needs to be expressed that I can help somebody else. I think for me what's so important, I'm going to backtrack a little bit, is to really have 1, 2, and 3 before I could move into this step, because it gets into some pretty rough stuff. I drank for a lot of years because I didn't like who I was. And that incomprehensible demoralization, I carried it around for a long time on the inside. And the putting the drink down was the beginning of starting to feel a little relief from that. It's a life or death program for me. If I drink, I die, and it says vigorous action. It doesn't say that I can wait 6 months, 12 months, you know, wait till I feel like doing it, find the perfect sponsor. Wait, you know, it says immediate, really, right after step three. But step three is so important to grasp first, because I have to have the power. It's not me, you know, and it's always about me. And so it talked about taking a look just how crucial this step is. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have a sponsor. And although I would say the first 4 step I did didn't follow this format, but, you know, she was just a sweet, kind, a lot of fun person until it came to this step, you know, and then she was like, there was no joking, it wasn't funny, you know. And when I would try to hide what it was that I had in that step, you know, she was like, she was really just kind of that teacher in her just came out, and I realized then that it is a matter of life and death for me. Liquor is just a symptom, and I needed to find out what makes Lorna behave in a way that Lorna doesn't really like. And we'll get into the resentments, the overall resentments, in a few other paragraphs, but you know, I didn't think I was angry at anybody. I was just pissed off at the world. And to be able to identify that it's not just people. You know, there's organizations, there's the things that I was taught in school that I couldn't be, the things that I was taught I couldn't do, that it wasn't okay to think this way and it wasn't okay to feel that way. And I just wanted to be anybody other than who I was. That's what I knew, and alcohol did that for me. Until it stopped working. But it was slowly killing me, and it wasn't killing me fast enough. So this step was a way to actually start the cleansing process and the healing process from the inside out. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Lorna. I'm going to continue on page 64, and it's actually just the next paragraph. It starts, "Therefore, we started." Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations.
Yeah, I misunderstood this whole inventory thing for a long time. I didn't think it was a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. I thought it was a blame-finding process, and that at the end of this, everything was my fault. I just from sitting in meetings, sometimes that I get that impression. You know, what's your part? Well, what did you do wrong? Well, what did you do wrong? Well, what did you do wrong? And that's just not what it's all about. One, the reality is that, hey, I may be an alcoholic, but other people do things wrong. Thank you very much. But it's not about, it's true, assigning blame. And doing it that way, what it produced was like a lot of self-hatred, which is completely unproductive. As a matter of fact, it's just a bunch more resentment, and resentment kills me, so I have to be real careful about that. It was about seeing where was I going wrong, you know? And I can't fool myself about values. I love to judge. I don't know about if anybody else likes to do that, but I'm very good at it. I can just look at you and size you up and know everything about you instantly. I can decide whether you are good or bad and exactly how you should be treated and handled in an instant, you know? And I can sit here and I can pretend that it's like some valuable thing because it's gonna keep me out of trouble, but it's not. You know, because all that is me playing God. It's not my place to condemn another human being or to exalt them. So I can't sit here and kid myself and say that that's valuable for me. And I love this idea that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. You know, at the end of this list, I see a lot of things about myself that I don't particularly care for. You know, dishonesty, judgmentalness, manipulation, all kinds of crazy stuff. But what I realize is that it all came from one place. You know, every defect of character that I had, every screwed up thing, it's all coming from one place, and that's that self-centered nature that I have, because it is all about me. And the biggest ways that we see it are resentment, fear, and sex conduct, which oddly enough is what we do inventory on here in AA. And I was like, Lorna, I've done a couple of different inventories, some through treatment centers, various sponsors in AA. Not all of them were out of the big book. I've always come back to this big book inventory. This is what I do today. And just because it is so good at showing me what I need to see, if I just follow it step by step, I mean, man, it knocks those other inventories out of the water, you know? So I stick with this stuff today. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. I, too, was brought back to this format, and I found that this format was the clear, gave me the clearest picture of what I needed to see, and folds right into the other steps where it really is a process. In the beginning, I put this off, and I couldn't figure out. I said to one gal one day, a woman with a little bit of sobriety, you know, well, I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of that, I don't know why I got to do this, and why is this taking me so long? And she said, well, I'll tell you what the problem is. She said, it's a fearless inventory. And I'm like, oh. So she said, you have to be fearless. So, you know, never wanting to admit that I was afraid of anything, and yet at the same time, what this step revealed for me was that it was all about my fears. The fact-finding really helped to be able to understand that I'm going to just look at stuff and I'm not going to hit myself with it, that I don't have to go into that deep, dark place of remorse, that it's actually about there's some things that I do, some behaviors that don't work for me anymore now that I'm not drinking, and it and I need to be able to see that so it can lighten my load and I can actually see the sunlight of the Spirit and let it change me in a way that God, I can become the person that God intends for me to be, because there's love deep down inside of me. And it's okay. That doesn't make me a weak person, doesn't make me vulnerable. But there's things that I do and things in my past that had blocked me from being that person. So the honest part is probably the hard part, because I can sugarcoat, I can make it look like it's all about you and your fault, or I can do just the opposite and say that it's all me and you didn't play any part in it. Well, the honest part is I have to look at both sides of that. I have to look at where I wronged and where I was wronged, and what did I do with that wrong that was heard upon, that was done to me as well. I'm my own worst enemy, bottom line. And it's a mental illness, and it's all in my head. And how I perceive things and how I look at things are going to determine a lot of my well-being. So I'm at a point in my recovery now where I'm doing this step because I'm still hurting, and I don't want to hurt anymore. So I got to look at those things that I'm afraid to look at. I had a really good sponsor. Like I said, God is my God, my higher power, who I choose to call God today, brought me to this place and wasn't going to dump me and leave me here. And I was sure of that. So, but I was glad that I didn't have to do it alone. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. We're just going to continue on with the rest of that page. It's the bottom paragraph on page 64, which starts off, resentment is. So resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
Yeah, the first, I too did not think that I was that angry until I thought I had like a few key things that I was like angry about, those first things that always come into my mind, and then somebody talked to me about what resentment actually was, and it's about more than just like the people that I hate or the things that like really, really ticked me off. They used, he gave me a lot of synonyms for it, like let down, disappointed, irritated. Apparently that's resentment too. Like if anger is like the great big great white of resentment, like irritation's little piranhas, and man, if you get enough of those suckers together, they will eat you alive. And it really will destroy me. I remember prior to taking the steps, having those 2 months sober, and that's what got me. Man, it was just this freaking anger was on me. I was waking up with it. I was going to bed with it. And, you know, I was, eventually it was just kind of like, screw it. You know, screw it. I needed time out. And I was definitely was not thinking about the consequences or the things that would happen, you know, but it really is a horrible, horrible thing for me. But the big thing in this is this idea that we need to fix the spiritual malady. I always thought that if I was an alcoholic, I needed to fix my drinking. And what I found was that was kind of like a pointless and futile effort. There really is nothing I can do to fix my drinking. You know, I can't control it. I can't stop it. You know, it just doesn't work for me. I do not have that power. I might as well like sit around and like try to prevent the sun from rising in the morning. You know, it's that big of a waste of my time. And I was very fortunate that people, my sponsor early on was not telling me don't drink. She wasn't even worried about whether or not I was drinking. What she was talking to me about was this spiritual stuff. And eventually I did latch onto it. And it was really weird and it was really unexpected, because when I just focused on the steps and fixing that relationship with God, all that crazy mental stuff that led me to a drink just disappeared. It just kind of straightened itself out. And I didn't have to put any effort into not drinking. It just kind of happened of its own accord, which was a relief for me, because I was a person that was like terrified to go into grocery stores and stuff in case I accidentally drank and ruined it again. You know, it just didn't occur. Somebody always puts it very well. He says, stop trying to fix something that you can't fix. You know, work on your relationship with God and see if that stuff doesn't straighten itself out. And just in case we have any, like, people who don't like the word God, for me, when I say that, I mean the source of love, joy, and freedom. That's my simple conception. And when I'm blocked off from that, you know, that source of love, joy, and freedom, I'm a miserable little puppy. This is the idea of a list. It was very strongly suggested to me that I go down in my columns and not across. You know, and so what I did when I sat down to do this, I kind of took it in chunks of my life. That was the easiest for me. You know, what was I mad about in elementary school? You know, what was I mad about in middle school? What was I mad about at my first job? And just did the people, institution, principles, life's not fair. I was very angry about that one. But I wrote all that down in my first column, and I did it in a couple sessions. You know, the first one, it was like a whole bunch of stuff, you know, and then it kind of peters out. And so I came back and said, God, show me what else I need to see, you know, and I got some more. And then when I was done with that, I looked at the cause. You know, why was I angry about this stuff? And I try to be specific, like, you know, he's a jerk, kind of wasn't working for me, you know. he made fun of me or something like that, specifically what it was to the best of my that I could remember, and then what it affected. Once again, I just kind of went down the columns. It made it a lot simpler for me. I like simple, especially when your head's crazy, you need simple. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
That's right.
Okay. Resentment is the number one offender. And when I couple that with complacency, it's pure living hell. I know that I also was taught to do it from the, just make that list, the vertical column from top to bottom. And I'm going to tell you that this analytical mind just couldn't grasp the idea of how big does the column have to be? how many lines should I make for the space for the cause? And the effects part, whatever. You know, it was I didn't see how it was all going to come together. And it's been my experience with the people that I have shared recovery with that I'm not alone with that. Everyone that I have shared these steps with goes through that. How am I supposed to put the columns? Do I use two pages? Do I use one page for every? And so, you know, I have to get past that and just do it. You know, it's like I don't have to do it perfect. I have to be thorough, but I don't have to do it perfect. And so once I got past that, that resentment list was a little bit longer than I thought it was going to be. The eye opener for me was that I really did have these resentments. You know, the anger was coming from somewhere. And I wanted to be free of that. So I went through, you know, the rest of the causes. And for my effects, you know, my biggest revelation, I think, with that was that I was so afraid of being afraid that I never felt the fear. I went right to anger. And once I could identify and actually tell somebody that I was afraid of being replaced, I was afraid of being left alone, I was afraid that I was going to live my life alone, you know, all those things that, because I wasn't worth being with, you know. And then the other part was to take a look and see that now I got these resentments and, well, you know, I'm really mad at that person because they made me do all these things, you know. And the bottom line was Lorna couldn't say no. You know, I just didn't have the courage to tell you, no. You know, I don't want to do that. You know, so instead, I would, you know, shovel your driveway, go do your grocery shopping, do all those things that people needed me to do, and Lorna got lost. I had no idea who I was in sobriety. You know, I had a partner, and I did whatever they wanted to do because they were everything to me. And all this, you know, came out in the fourth step. And I got better from seeing at it, and I didn't die. You know, once I saw it, it didn't kill me. It saved my life, really. It gave me a life today that I can share with other people, which is really cool. And I can say yes to those things that maybe I don't feel comfortable doing, but it's okay to do, and not be resentful about the fact. Because I'm going to tell you right up front, my biggest character defect was the martyr in me. And that's just not a really good person to live with. But but anyway, my self-esteem was definitely an issue, and I drank to be somebody that I wasn't. And I learned that I could be that person without the alcohol that I wanted to be, and with a lot of support from the people in these rooms. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 65. And it's actually starting right at the bottom, those last three lines there on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Yeah, the first thing that's apparent and has always been apparent to me is that the world and its people are often quite wrong. And I do see that when I write inventory. Every now and again, I hear people give an AA talk, and they talk about like these perfect childhood they had, and like the perfect parents. And I just like look at those people. I'm like, what on earth are you talking about? You know, I just never saw that. But to conclude that others were wrong was as far as I had gotten. You know, when I was a kid, my parents had split up, and my dad, I had gone to see my dad, so I got back from vacation with him, and I was like on this big daddy kick, right? And so I'm like calling this guy every single day. And I call him one day, and I'm talking to him, and he says to me, he says, "Ryan, why do you keep calling me every day? You know? Like, that's kind of screwed up. What did it affect?" Well, it affected my self-esteem. It affected my sense of security. It affected my personal relationship with him. I remember being in middle school, right? And there was this girl, Billy. Billy didn't like me, and Billy was a bully. And so Billy grabbed her friend, Natasha, and one day they decided to beat me up. You know, or try to, I should say. I ran faster than, you know. Once again, very obvious to me that the world and its people were often quite wrong, but that was as far as I got. I stopped there. I never looked at my part and how I was living. I just want to sit around and think about how screwed up everything was, and the result was that I stayed sore. Mm-hmm. I did. I had like this backlog. You know, I was, 30 years old and AA, pissed off, kicked off about stuff that had happened, you know, over 20 years ago, you know, and it was just eating away at me. And I did stay sore, and that remorse, because every now and again I would sit there and I would look at myself, and then I like to think that, you know, see all the things that I had done wrong, you know, and all those times where I could just wish I could just go back and change that one thing, just let me go back and change that one thing, and all that remorse, and walking around feeling like the biggest F up ever, like this walking, talking disaster who could never ever get anything right, you know, and it was just a horrible way to live. I used to think that I had depression, you know, like from this chemical imbalance in my brain, and I got a lot of treatment for that, but what I realized is that I was really just angry and fed up, you know, I would just, you know, lay in bed, you know, because why bother getting up? You know, I'm ticked off. Nothing's going to work out the way I want to anyways. You know, I had no idea that that was anger, you know, and it talks about resentment being fatal, but because it can, man, you get in a bad enough spot and all of a sudden it's like, you know what, why even bother to live? Nothing's going to work out the way that I want to anyways. I had no idea that that was anger. Absolutely no idea that that was anger. But it will kill me. Thanks.
Yeah, shining the light on the other people didn't help me make any changes for myself. And it only magnified the problem. So if I wanted to live in the solution, I had to take it one step further. And there's nothing fact-facing about that. So there was no win situation with that. So I that's all I got.
Thank you. Now we're going to go to page 66, and it's actually just continuing the next paragraph. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
Yeah. Squandering the hours. Oh my gosh. You know, I want to say that I hate resentment, but if you like look at the way that I actually live, you would think that I absolutely love resentment. I do. I like to replay what happened in my mind a couple of times, a couple of hundred times, and then I like to plan out what I'm going to say to you, and then I know instantly what you're going to say back, and then I know exactly what I'm going to say, and it's just like this back and forth conversation in my head, on, and you know what, you know, you might say this, and if you do say this, then I'm going to say this, but you're probably going to say this, over and over and over again, and the ultimate conclusion of this is always that you're a screwed up person, and depending on how screwed up you are, you should probably just die and not be on this earth anymore, because the world would be a better place without you. And you know, I'm going to be honest, sometimes I don't mind that so much because it can be kind of entertaining. When you think about this same crap over and over again, about the thousandth time, it's a little exhausting and I'm a little tired of it. It's like, okay, I know what I'm going to say next time I see him. I got it. Would you please stop thinking about it? And I just don't know how to make it stop. You know, it's just like, where's the shut-off switch for this stuff? For the love of God, tell me where the shut-off switch is, because I'm tired of thinking about it. I'm ready to move on. You know, like I said, I had resentments that were 20, 25 years old. You know, I'm over it already, you know? And one of the mistakes, I don't know if we read this paragraph, but it says we could not wish them away any more than alcohol. You know, I had no idea how to get rid of that stuff. Absolutely no idea. That's another way that I was powerless. That's another way that life was unmanageable. Like, oh my God, I want to be over it already. You know, I want to be over it already, but I just can't. I just can't. And that stuff, just like I said, it is fatal. You know, that resentment, even if it doesn't lead me back to a drink, I don't think I'm in too much danger of drinking anymore. God, remove that obsession. If I live like this, I'm far more prone to suicide, you know, or it'll get me in other ways, you know. You know, let me just eat myself to death to, like, cover up those feelings, or, you know, smoke myself to death. I mean, it really will kill me. And if I want to maintain and grow this spiritual experience, I've got to get rid of this stuff. It's futile and unhappy. I mean, they describe it perfectly. I'm not even going to try to add that. Like, what's the point? Waking up every morning going, what's the point? Why even bother? Thanks.
You know, I'm a retread, and I came into recovery, and I had 2 years without doing the steps and no sponsor, and my anger and my self-centeredness brought me right back to the alcohol after 2 years. And I'm surprised I lasted that long. Well, I was doing a lot of meetings here, and I relocated down to Charleston. So there was about a year period where I just kind of hung on. And I mean, hung on. And all of a sudden, I was feeling like I wasn't a part of the team on the ship. And I just felt excluded from everything. But the anger come back. And so when I came back into the rooms and read this part, I understood what it meant to, I liked the sunlight of the Spirit. It felt good to me. You know, I wanted that. And I had to understand and discover what forgiveness was to be able to have that. And this deep resentment, it wasn't going to get me there. And I understood that the second time around. It didn't mean it went away, because I was good with the, you know, anger is poison, except how can you not be angry with the injustices and the abuse that you hear about and read about and of the innocent? And I remember really having a hard time with that. And then one of the speakers at the conference out at the oceanfront had talked about the difference between God's world and man's world, and the abuse was of man's world and it wasn't of God's world. And then I kind of got into, you know, I was told that people either come to us They either come to me to give me love or because they need love. And so I kind of use that from that point on when I'm having a trouble with somebody and I feel like they're really stepping over my boundaries here, to really kind of take a look and see, oh, this person needs love. You know, and I may walk away, I still may detach, but I can leave that situation a little differently than lashing out sometimes, so that kind of helps me. But I do realize that there is justifiable anger, it's just as dangerous to me in that drink. And it's all, you know, I don't want to go back there. So I got to do what it takes to stay free of that resentment. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, and now we are going to go to... page that's on. Sorry, we're just continuing really on page 66. We turned back to the list. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
Yeah, this looking at things from a different angle was huge. I mean, when it says that the world and its people really dominated us, it did. Anger and all that stuff, it controlled every aspect of my life, and I didn't even realize it. You know, it would control where I would go, who I would talk to. It would control whether or not I could sleep at night, what jobs I had, what state I lived in, who I was dating, all of it, you know, whether or not I could get out of bed in the morning. And it just like it says, could not wish it away more than alcohol. And it says, this is my course, that I have to realize that these are sick people. And I'll tell you that was absolutely huge for me. I used to look at all this stuff as good and bad, you know, or either a good person or a bad person. And I looked at myself that way. You're either a good person or a bad person, you know, but this idea that it's not about good and bad, but it's about, you know, sick or well, that was huge for me. And especially when I look at my behavior, you know, why was I living that way? Why was I acting that way? You know, because I was sick. You know, and many a times I was good at giving myself that reason for poor behavior, but I did not give that excuse to other people. And seeing that sickness in myself and that it wasn't about being a bad person has allowed a lot of forgiveness and tolerance to come into my life for other people. You know, I can realize today and look at when somebody's having a bad day or maybe they're just jerks or whatever it is, it's like, that's not the real them. That is not the real them. You know, that comes from their own struggles in life, you know. And they're probably not a well and happy person, because well and happy people don't act that way. And they say love and tolerance of others is our code here. And that's given me the ability to be very tolerant these days. I did not always have that. My usual mode of operations is screw you, I'm out. And you can see that by the number of home groups I've had in the past couple of years, but that's a whole other story. But it has. It does. It allows me to interact with people and to stay places because I'm a believer. I'm a believer. A year or two is about my limit, and then I'm gone. There was something that this idea of God showing us how to do that is huge. I can't do it on my own. And sometimes that's just a matter of keeping my mouth shut, because I'm big on retaliation argument. I like to take little jabs. I like to be real subtle about it. There's this lady that says, sometimes the most spiritual thing I do all day long is to keep my mouth shut. And God has really given me the ability to see when it's time to keep my mouth shut and when I'll have an opportunity to maybe be helpful to that person. And it's pretty cool. But I do have to remember that people like myself are sick too. Thanks.
This, I think, where I realized how much of my power I gave away to those resentments. And it just wasn't helping me. You know, it was keeping me stuck. So I liked how that it takes us to this four-step prayer. And that prayer was the answer to being relieved of that which I could not change for myself. And that I had to, that's the work I had to do, was to humble myself enough to get on my knees and say that prayer, even when I didn't want to, and pray that God would open my mind to see how I could be of service in that particular situation. It's clear to me now that, you know, I thought I was all-knowing of what the other person's path was, but I really didn't have a clue, and it might have been more than just spilling coffee on a uniform. You know, I mean, people have real problems and real issues and real hurtful, painful things that they're dealing with, and I can't see that. I know this person over here put up this big wall and shell so you couldn't see my stuff, you know, and how hard it was for me to look at my stuff. So I need to remember that. And that helps me to change my perception. And for me, that is the miracle, is in the change in perception in this program and the way that we see life and deal with things and free ourselves from that, which is really none of my friggin' business. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the last paragraph that we're going to read this evening. And it's just a continuation on page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
Yeah, the key to this for me is definitely to temporarily suspend reality and completely forget about what other people have done and how they've acted and how it's hurt my feelings and blah, 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 and look solely at my part and how I've behaved. Whether it's out of the blue or in response to somebody else, look at my part. And to put away all the excuses. I have a lot of excuses, you know, all that poor behavior. I can give you very good reasons for it, and here's my list, you know, and I had to completely throw that out and look at myself. And it was helpful to have a set of questions to ask myself, you know, where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Where was I to blame? You know, when I look at that example with my dad. You know, in that instant, okay, just an innocent little girl, but where was I selfish? You know, I was perfectly happy to go out and visit him for years and years and years and get my free vacation and let him pay for the flight ticket and the hotel rooms and the meals and all that stuff, but I couldn't remember the guy's birthday. You know, I had a stock of belated birthday cards in my life. Where had I been dishonest? I've never tried to have any kind of honest and open relationship with my dad. He was just kind of a thing that was there, self-seeking. It was great to use those things as an excuse for my behavior. You know, having a rough time, behaving poorly. Oh, leave me alone. My daddy was so mean to me. Frightened. Well, not so much in that situation. That situation with Billy. You know, she didn't just chase me down the street out of the blue. One of the first times I remember to remember meeting her, and yeah, she was a little bit of a bully, but we were at a bus stop, and I got to the bus stop first, daggone it, and I was going to get on the bus first, thank you very much. Might have caused a little conflict there, put me on her radar, you know. Self-seeking, man, she was great to put down to build myself up, you know, at least I'm not like her, dishonest. You know, I really didn't see her as a person. That's the thing about these people on my resentment list. They cease to be human beings, and they're just things to be hated. You know, and what I found out later about her is she had lost both of her parents and was living with her grandmother. You know, did fear come into that? Absolutely. Yeah, get your physical security threatened in it, and fear definitely comes in. You know, and I was afraid about what people would think about me and all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, and when I looked at that, and I remember writing all this stuff down, and I got to the end of it, and I looked back at it, and all I could see was this huge columns of eyes. I, me, you know, and I could just see all the ways that I had gone wrong, all the ways that I had caused chaos in my own life. And I was admitting our wrongs, honestly. I think that's why in the beginning, they tell us that we have to be honest with ourselves. For me, nobody has the answers to column four but me. You know, I know the answer to this stuff, and I have to be brutally honest with myself. You know, no more free passes. If I want to get well, take your free pass and throw it in the trash. You know, let's see what's going on. And it's a pretty stark reality when you see it in black and white, because I really was a person who thought I wasn't that bad. You know, I could look at other people and say, yeah, but I was. I was a user, a manipulator, a liar, all kinds of crazy stuff. A lot of the things that I hated about other people, guilty. And it did. It did cause some remorse. You know, I was a little bit horrified about how I had treated other people. And then there comes that sincere desire to try to make things right. Because, man, I was so consumed by myself and what was going on with me and my feelings and my hurt and my wants and my desires that I was completely oblivious to the damage that I was doing to other people. You know, it just didn't hit the radar. You know, you're here to support me and deal with it. You know, that was very much my attitude. It's kind of funny that they're already prepping us to start doing amends here, which is another horrifying thing. More horrifying than inventory, if you ask me. Thanks.
I think there's four parts to the four step, and the first one being that chart with the resentment. And we go back to the list again and again, and it's like, again. But this is the second part that's just so important for me to make those, well, not even that I'm powerless, have the power to make the changes, but to understand, put the changes in motion, so I know what to ask for. And to see it in black and white, it's just there. You know, I can't really avoid it. For me, this didn't happen like right away. It took some more life experiences and relationship issues before it really revealed itself, before I could really understand and see that mental twist. And And I'm still looking at that today. You know, I mean, it's a lifelong process, and I'm still looking at it. Well, there's a 10th step for that, but I needed help with this, I guess is what I was saying. I needed my guide to help me in some ways, because like I said, I would take responsibility for what was not mine to take, and then I wouldn't take responsibility for what was mine to take. It's like for some reason my brain's got everything switched. So, but this is where the it allows me, once I can see my part, it helps me to forgive the other person as I'm forgiving myself, because, you know, I can actually see, I can take responsibility, you know, because that's what I had to do. I never took responsibility. I just wanted to drink and party and pretend I was somebody that I wasn't. So, this is a cleansing step. It's not easy, but it is simple, and I complicate the heck out of it. That's all I got.
Thank you. Okay, thanks both to Ryan and Lorna for sharing their experience, strength, and hope on part one of step four. So we're going to pass the seven tradition baskets, and while we're doing that, I'll read this self-support card from AA. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this point, I'll ask, are there any AA-related announcements? Yes.
My name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lisa.
The annual gratitude breakfast is coming up November 23rd, right? 23rd?
Mm.
Is that right? Yes, November 23rd. It's at Holy Family, which is down, it's Great Neck and
First Colonial.
Thank you. I mean, I'm only like retirement forever. Anyway, it starts at 8, and then breakfast is 8:30, and the speakers start at 10.
So what day is that? Sorry, Saturday, November.
It's Saturday. Mm-hmm. Saturday, November 23rd.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you.
Hi,
Dion.
Hey, Dion.
Okay. And I'd like to point out that literature is available. It's on that table over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. You can help yourself to meeting lists, pamphlets, and so on. The books are available at a nominal cost. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And in closing, well, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. Everybody is welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at this charming restaurant, which is really, it's almost like going on vacation to Mexico. It's magical. So it's right there on 22nd and Colonial. And please come along. You're all welcome. They've got plenty of room. And even if you don't have any money, just come along and eat the chips and hope the guy doesn't catch you. Okay, so has anybody volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Steve, you want to do it? Thank you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us, more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation that you, what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Steve. And for those that would care to join us, we're going to form a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. Thanks, Lorna. That was great.
Thank you. Good job.
It's not really going to be a circle. It's more like a trapezoid. An alcoholic circle. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the